Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
I have never met Mr. Eddy. I've heard here in this meeting a couple people express that they appreciate his experience. But I've talked with others in the community since that meeting who all have serious misgivings. And I just think maybe we need to revisit that whole process.
So to say I found these comments unexpected might be... That might be a little bit much, but to say that I was surprised by her raising the objection of any kind to Buzz Eddy. See, here's the background on all this, okay? This is Marilyn Farrow. She's the city councilwoman in the city of Milton. And Randy Jorgensen, city manager, is retiring in August, if I remember correctly. It's August or September. At this point, it doesn't really matter. It's a ways off. And they've been having a conversation about how to replace him. And you basically have, you know, two possibilities. Possibility number one is they bring in somebody like Buzz Eddy, the former city manager for the city of Gulf Breeze for a quarter of a century. You know, widely respected, capable administrator, you know, really good guy. I know Buzz personally. We've had him on the show a bunch of times back when he was a city manager. And, you know, he's sort of a legendary resource in the state of Florida. You know, he basically does turnarounds for other cities right now, like in counties. Like, he's there in cities. That's what he does. And, that's one possibility. Bring him in, have him talk to all of the different council members, get their opinion of what they want, who they want, kind of put all that together, then take all the applications, winnow them down to like 12, you know, and then have the council kind of winnow that down to a handful and then have them come in to do meet and greets and interviews and maybe a public meeting where they meet citizens who are concerned and so forth. That's one possibility. Possibility number two is to put out for a headhunter, to actually hire somebody to go out and scour the country and look for somebody who's going to be our city manager. Now, problems that we have right now is that there are at least two other local municipalities that are looking for city managers. I think it's Destin and Fort Walton Beach. I'm just going on memory. I think that's right. But, you know, so you have that challenge. You also have the challenge that the city of Milton is, you know, the city of Milton council is, what's the word I want? A catastrophe. As you guys know, if you've listened to this show for any period of time. And so getting somebody who's going to be willing to come here, who is worth having to come here to work for our city is going to be, you know, that's going to be its own unique challenge. The backdrop to, and by the way, the city, and it's going to cost money to hire a headhunter. So the city council has been dithering, sort of, over whether to go with option A and B, or option B. And the backdrop to all of this is that the people, the pitchfork posse, like the antis, the troublemakers, the ones who are always up in arms over something, you know, whether it's the wastewater treatment plant's been the biggest one, and they hate Randy. I mean, they really, their goal in life is to get rid of Randy. They even try to get, like, if we can get rid of the grants writer for the city of Milton, then all these grants will fall apart and the wastewater treatment plant will fall apart. And it just, like, it's that bad. So in their minds, they think that if Randy is in charge of this process of finding the person to replace him, then he's going to somehow or other put Ed Spears in. Ed Spears is the assistant city administrator. And Ed is a super capable guy. He's certainly up to the task. I don't know that he'll be the best of all the candidates, but, you know, if it winds up being Ed, I think that's great for the city. If it winds up being somebody else, okay, so be it. But they just hate Ed because they think Ed is just a replacement for Randy, and they want to get somebody in there that they can persuade to do things their way. Okay, that's the backdrop to all of this. So on the city council, you got Marilyn Farrow and Mike Cusack, who are both new, and they're both kind of, they seem to be aligned with the Pitchfork posse. They seem to be always kind of the angry outsiders, and they're only two on the eight board right now, so they don't have a lot of power, but they're doing what they can. And in the doing what they can category, they're trying to find any way to shift the focus of the replacement city administrator search to be something other than basically Ed Spears. That's basically, they're trying to find somebody to come in that's either going to look better than he is or somehow. So in their mind, Randy Jorgensen picking Buzz Eddy is like Randy's way of trying to get it. Is, you know, they feel like that's the challenge. So what they've decided to do here, or at least what Marilyn Farrow, Mike Cusack didn't speak, so I'm just saying her at the moment, but she's talking about Buzz Eddy like, I don't know about this Buzz Eddy now. I'm not sure about this guy.
FCC. So
initially, you had advised us, Randy, that he was a member of that group. And then we were told at the next meeting that he had retired from that group. So I just think maybe there needs to be a more impartial process in the hiring.
So she first raises the question. Some people have said, well, they got misgivings about him. I'm not sure about this fella. And then, well, I'm not even sure if he's got the right certifications or participation in these organizations anymore. Are you sure about this Buzz Eddy? And I was like, oh, Lordy. This is a mistake. Buzz Eddy, like I said, is widely respected. I'm just trying to think of, like, who else in our community that would kind of rise to that same level where everybody's like, yeah. I mean, you know, Mayor Wiggins maybe would be kind of in that category. I don't know. Who was the – I can't all of a sudden think the old beach administrator, SRIA, and all of a sudden his name escapes me, and I feel terrible about it, but he's an Ole Miss fan. Anyway, that kind of a person, like somebody who everybody thinks this person does great, except, like, right now it's not politically advantageous to say it. So Randy, very much restraining himself, I think, says...
I appreciate that. I don't think you can find a more impartial party than Mr. Eddy. Mr. Eddy was a senior advisor for the Florida City County Management Association for years. He served as the city manager for the city of Gulf Breeze for a quarter century.
So that's shot one. Like, oh my God, woman, what are you saying? You're so, you could not be more wrong.
He is a brilliant mind on local government affairs. And he's someone that everyone in this state at times would turn to for advice and counsel.
Like, people across the street ask him to help them, and you're saying, well, I don't know if he's capable of helping little old Milton here in his home county.
He's got a tremendous network of individuals that he can call on to assist the city with this process. He doesn't have an allegiance or alliance with anyone here. That's why he wants to talk to all of you individually to find out how you feel.
He goes on, because, and rightly so, this is such an amazing thing for somebody to try to say about Buzz Eddy.
I couldn't recommend someone any higher than I could Buzz Eddy.
And his job right now?
He's a person right now that's called into communities that are troubled to help them on a temporary basis to work through their difficulties, regardless of what they may be.
He goes in and fixes distressed communities, but I don't know if he can be trusted to handle us fine in the city manager.
He's willing to give his time, and I can tell you that from my perspective, on behalf of the city of Milton, I would express my gratitude for him in being willing, because there's really nothing in this for him. He does it because he's got a love for Santa Rosa County, the city of Milton, the state of Florida, and the nation.
Yeah, I mean, this is such an off-target attack. It's so misguided. And really, sometimes understanding the political situation and what motivates people is, you know, you've got to kind of know a bit. And in this case, it's just like, I think this is coming from, as I've said clearly, is that she and Mike Cusack, who again didn't really speak on this too much, he has in the past. He's also very much in favor of Headhunter. Hey, why don't we do a Headhunter? Let's do a Headhunter, you know? Why? Because again, that's more likely in their minds to find somebody other than anybody internal, and they're worried that anybody internal, including Ed Spears, would be too loyal or too much in the mold of or too aligned with the current direction of the city, which is to go with the wastewater treatment plant. So, yeah, she just got scolded. I mean, I can only imagine Randy, like, very much controlling his frustration at her for even, I mean, she didn't really insult him, but she tried to, kind of. And it'd be like somebody saying, you know, hey, we've hired a lawyer. His name is Mike Papantoni. Oh, I don't know if he's a very good lawyer. You know, we got this developer here. It's Quint Studer. I don't know if he's a very good developer. You know, we got this football player. You know, it's Emmett Smith. I'm not too sure about that guy. Like, I mean, what are you doing? It's so silly. Anyway, so Heather Lindsay jumped in. She didn't take an awful lot other than to explain, like, why he stepped down from Gulf Breeze.
I don't know what misgivings were shared with you, but I would just echo what Mr. Jorgensen's saying about Mr. Eddy. The reason why he's retired is because he did take a position on a political race in Gulf Breeze. Otherwise, he would still be part of the organization, but the organization doesn't expect people to take those positions. So he, as a matter of, you know, ethics and appropriateness, he left that organization so he could take a position in a race that was important to his community.
See, I didn't remember that being the reason he stepped down, but that's what she says, and I don't dispute it. But that would indicate that as a matter of ethics, he would rather advocate for a political matter within his own community that he cared about enough than keep a 25-year job that he had at the city of Gulf Breeze. You know, so when it comes to ethics, right? So it's just, I don't know. It was weird. It was just so weird to hear this and so inappropriate and so off target. Honestly, at this point, I hope she apologizes. Anybody can make a mistake, and I hope she apologizes. I hope in the next meeting that Marilyn Farrow gets up and says, "Hey, I just, you know, I wanted to say I'm sorry. You know, we're grateful to have the help of Buzz Eddy. I think he's going to be fine." Oh, Buckley, by the way, was the person I just couldn't think of Buck's name a minute ago, who was the county commissioner in both counties, if I remember correctly, at one time. I mean, not the same time, but, you know, and then also, of course, the SRA executive director for the longest time before Robbie took over. Anyway, the current executive director, and before that, Paolo Giao. 522 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local.
Oh, great. Blow dart, yeah? Super.
It's brutal out here.
Good morning, 525, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Jenna is sitting in today for Candy, who is off for today and Monday. I got you on Monday, too?
Yes.
Outstanding.
Bringing
so
in
much
the month
fun.
Of May.
David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
And good morning. Three soldiers have passed away after two Army helicopters collided in midair, returning home from a training flight in Alaska yesterday. The Apache helicopters went down Thursday south of Fairbanks. The Army's 11th Airborne Division says two soldiers died at the crash site. A third died en route to the hospital. Border towns now bracing for a surge of illegal immigration following the end of Title 42. In about 2 weeks, the health rule used to expedite deportations comes to an end. Several thousand migrants are estimated to be waiting in northern Mexico to cross the border. And the first round of the NFL draft saw 31 new players enter the league last night. And the Carolina Panthers kicked things off by selecting Alabama quarterback Bryce Young with the first overall pick. And two other Alabama players also chosen last night. Will Anderson Jr., chosen by Houston. Detroit took Jahmyr Gibbs. And also, former Pine Forest High School football standout Devon Witherspoon made it in the draft. I believe it was the fifth round pick. Fifth round for the Seattle Seahawks.
Outstanding. Very good. First time in, my understanding, first time in the modern era, Alabama's had an actual overall number one pick, which seems amazing to me that would be the
right
first time for them. But, outstanding. David, thanks so much for the update. We also had some things happen last night. Kind of an odd night, interesting night. I think I've got this set up properly, but we'll see if I do. It was the final late show for James Corden.
We are very, very lucky to be on a network like CBS. I cannot express how fantastic they have been with me from day one. It's unfathomable why they took a chance on me to do this job. I will never understand it. But they have supported and they have loved this show. And I will be forever grateful for what they've done for me and my family. It's been... It's been life-changing.
Yeah, that was part of his final monologue. It was actually a two-parter. They had a primetime special that was kind of like the pre-last, you know, the penultimate. And then you had the ultimate, which ended, I think, rather fittingly with him singing.
The most, and part of me thinks, why not stay here forever? But deep in my heart, I just know. No more shows to be showing. It's time I was going. It's time. Thanks for watching. That's our show.
Thank you so much for your time, everybody. I will miss you. Good night.
It's always nice when somebody gives their crowd, their fans, a real closure moment. Were you a Late Late Show fan at all, Jenna? You don't do TV too much in your house, right? That's kind
no,
of the...
Yeah, not too much, but I liked his whatever that car
carpool
ride
karaoke.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. That was always something I'd go back on YouTube or the yeah that one was gold. But I love him in that movie, the Emoji Movie, whatever it is. That when he sings, I'm just thinking of emojis, like a poop emoji dancing around. Sorry.
You know, the way people know you. The things, I was wondering that, like, you know, at some point, you know, we'll do a last radio show, right? And, and you know, retire or whatever in 100 years from now. And, you know, I was wondering, like, you know, in 5 years after that, what will people remember? You know, you always kind of
dancing
wonder,
poop emoji.
Oh, and by the way, since we're kind of on this subject, let me just say, we didn't get a chance to talk. I'm going to take advantage of today. I'm going to take advantage of today because you have actually sort of left Pep Talk.
One foot out the
yeah,
door.
Yeah, right. But
one
you're,
pinky
you know,
toe
and
in.
Tammy's doing such a great job. But you're, yes. We never did get a real chance to say goodbye to you. So I just want to say, you know, what, 3 years? Two years?
A little over 2 years.
2 years,
yeah.
So you were Pep Talk host for 2 years and just fabulous. I love you to death. You're fantastic. And
thank you.
I always, in radio, and I think sometimes in TV, Tucker Carlson, Don Lemon, I think what happens is, you know, people do their show and then they find out they're gone and you never hear from them again. And everybody pretends like they don't exist.
Right.
I hate that approach. I would much rather tell people, hey, thank you, you know, even, you know what, sometimes people leave under bad circumstances. You certainly didn't leave under bad circumstances.
No, I'm still here. They still let me in.
Right, exactly. And I just always think it's not fair to the listeners who have grown to know you and have a relationship all this time to just all of a sudden, hey, where'd they go?
Right.
Well, you know, so anyway, so thank you for being so great for all these years. And we'll continue
thank
to,
you
know, obviously you're here sometimes as a fill-in for Candy. So it's
absolutely
not the last time anybody's going to hear from you.
I'll be back.
And I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life.
Oh man, I love this for Michelle Salzman music. This is great. That's awesome. So yesterday we had a chance to talk to Michelle Salzman, state representative for District 1, which is the northern about two-thirds of Escambia County, and talk about things that are going on in session. Michelle, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So I want to start with the one that people probably don't know as much about, that they haven't heard as much news coverage about, that I think a lot of them would be like, oh, okay. HB 1543, you are a co-sponsor on this bill. This is the one that would undo one of the four key provisions of the post-Parkland bill that would allow people at the age of 18 to buy and transfer firearms instead of the current age of 21, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's a great bill. Certainly. Certainly all American.
And so this is a bill that's kind of been like stalled on the Senate side. You know, they just weren't willing to do this for a long time. Where does the bill stand in terms of Senate co-sponsorship status? Is this actually going to get through the legislature this year, do you think?
I don't think so. If I were being just completely honest, I would tell you that we have some blocks. This was a passion of the speakers. When I met with him a little over a year ago, we had all that controversy going on up here with one of the House members calling to action a bunch of people, trying to tell everybody we weren't pro-Second Amendment. But really, we knew if we had put a bill forward, it would completely fail, you know, going through the process. But we all agreed that we were going to work towards getting our Second Amendment rights back this session, the following session. So I would presume I don't think it's going to get past the finish line this year. It might. You never know. Negotiations are always fun and exciting.
Sure.
But if it doesn't, I'm pretty sure that it's going to be a big point of contention next year because the speaker really wants to pull that portion back.
Yeah, you know, it seems like to me there's three main issues out there kind of ripe for the taking potentially on gun rights. One would be this one of lowering the age back to 18, which I absolutely support. The second one would be campus carry because it's the same issue, right? It's are you going to allow adults to be able to protect themselves or are you going to make them dependent on this massive gun-free zone and hope that the campus cops are around to protect them?
Depend on the government.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the other one would be open carry, which we've already got permitless carry coming this summer and, you know, genuine open carry. Those to me are the three that are sort of big, ripe targets possibly left to do. And I don't know your position. I think you're in favor of open carry. I'm not sure about campus carry, though.
All the things.
I figured.
Just give it all to me. The campus carry is going to be a hard one, but we'll see how that goes in the future. But it's the whole thing is a lot. And with our mental health crisis that we have right now, it's hard to have a conversation about your gun rights because people consistently try to tie mental health with a gun. And those two are not the same. It's like telling your teacher, oh, I didn't fail the test. The pencil did. Hold on a minute. You made that choice. But at the same time, you know, it's a huge crisis and we need to address both of them, which I think we're doing a good job in Florida of trying to navigate that, fix what we did a few years ago, but also continue to invest in the future of mental health for our families.
Yesterday in the Senate, they had a big conversation about the resign to run portion of SB 7050, which is the election reforms package. And, you know, you had on the one hand, Travis Hudson, who's running the bill on the Senate side, say, look, we just don't want to lose our governor if he happens to run for president and not win. And Jason Pizzo says, why are we making a special bill just for one person? Isn't it kind of already that law? You're working on this on the House side, though, right?
I am. And I'll tell you, there's a couple of things. One, the Senate version is for the president of the United States and vice president of the United States. What I'm going to be doing on the House side is expanding that to all state and local government officials or constitutional officers will be able to run for a federal office without having to resign. Currently, if you're a state senator, you technically have to resign to run for Congress. So the bill is more of a cleanup language. The term qualify is ambiguous in itself, although we've had a lot of scholars and folks tell us, no, you don't really need to fix the law for the governor to run for president. We as a legislature have said, hold on a minute, if there are some issues that's coming up in these conversations and mostly done by the media, maybe we should actually address this so that we don't have to depend on the courts to decide this should someone run for office in the future, not necessarily in the upcoming presidential cycle. So there's some good stuff coming from it. It's certainly a needed thing to do. We never really put our eye on it, not in the last few years anyway, but we have redone this law in the past 10 to 15 years several times, as early as 2000, I believe, 18, when we revised it. But there's also another point that needs to be made. You know, everybody's shining a light on Florida because, you know, we're Florida and we have Governor DeSantis. But really what they need to be seeing is only four states in the United States have a resign to run law.
Interesting.
So it's not like we are doing something, whoa, out of the box and crazy. We're actually more stringent on what we allow in Florida than what most states in the United States do. So it's we're just simply opening that back up to clarifying some of the language in the actual statute. But I like the idea of allowing a senator to be able to run for Congress without having to resign. So if Senator Brockson wanted to run for Congress or, you know, we know he's not, but that's just an example.
Right.
He wouldn't have to resign from his seat.
No,
so
I agree.
Because they serve 4-year terms. So my version just opens it up to everybody, but certainly clarifying some terminology for qualifying because we don't in state level and local level officials, we don't qualify the same as a presidential nominee does because the major parties decide who the nominees are. They do that. We don't, you know, in the state and local government, we have to file the oath of office. We have to do petitions. There's certain things that we have to do for us to qualify, but a federal candidate, they don't do it the same way. So We just clarify that in statute.
Yeah, and I like that. In fact, that's one of the things that Jason Pizzo made the comment. He's like, well, why don't we open it up to statewide? And you're like, okay. and I agree. I don't think we ought to have a resign to run law. I think that it's I understand the reason for it. You know, you don't want to have somebody win the advancing election and then you're out that seat and the people didn't get a chance to vote on the replacement until the special election. But generally speaking, I don't like the resign to run concept. So I'm glad you guys are cleaning that up. Two bills I want to talk about. I hope I get a chance to do both of them. I may run out of time. But one, I definitely want to give you a chance to talk about your committee substitute for HB 1557, meaning it's gone through a bunch of iterations. This is to work on sexual exploitation and human trafficking. And what I want to know is anything you do in this realm, I know this is a passion for you. The hotels historically have been the real roadblock because they are opposed to all the changes, and they are a key, in my opinion, linchpin in solving this problem. What does your bill do, and how have the hotels been taking it?
Well, my bill does a lot, but the most important piece of my bill is the fact that it actually puts teeth into statute. So currently in the entire United States, there is no regulation for adult safe houses. We have some regulation for child safe houses, but not adult safe houses. So we've been kind of willy-nilly in it, you know, all throughout America. Nobody has really stood up and said, okay, this is what we should be requiring if you call yourself a safe house. We have some of those parameters currently in place through DCF for the child safe houses, but even still, we're missing a lot of pieces in that, too. So this bill came from Senator Angolia. Blaze has been a dear friend of mine for a while. He lives in South Florida. There was an issue where a child was trafficked from a child from a youth safe home. And he called me and he was like, we can't let this happen again. We got to do something. So we called the AG. We sat down with her. This is one of her big priorities this year. So having it be the AG's big priority and, you know, starting this so early, we started it pretty early on in negotiations. We've been able to work through a lot of things you typically wouldn't work through. And being the vice chair of healthcare appropriations, seeing that this is going to cost around $1 million to launch, it was easy for me to say, hey, chair, I need a little bit of money to be allocated for this new bill that we're trying to get passed. And, you know, so just a lot of teamwork. But the pushback, and I'm not one of those people that does the little push button things, but the pushback was only Disney. I haven't heard from any other hotelier yet, although we just added some strong language in there because as we started human trafficking laws requiring the signage and the training in the hotel rooms three years ago, every year they have doubled in non-compliance as far as training and signage goes. So for the most part, the hoteliers in the state of Florida are saying, yeah, okay, whatever, because there's no fines or anything. Initially, we launched it, and people kind of participated. We had about an 80% rate. But as we've moved on in years, their trick is slowly dwindling down, and they're not doing anything. So now we're like, you know what? You're going to have 45 days to comply, or you're going to get a $2,000 fine every time you don't do it.
Good.
But we just added that component a couple weeks ago, so they haven't really had a chance to really freak out. But my only, the only hotelier quote, or, you know, that type of industry was Disney. They came in and said, you're wanting us to put these signs at a spa, you know, our resorts, that would scare people away. And so I brought them in. We talked through it. We changed a little bit to make them feel a little more comfortable about it. I think they're happy now. But they were the only ones that came in against that piece of the bill so far. But we'll be pulling. The Senate version is on the floor, I think, today. And we'll be pulling exactly the language that they passed. We're going to bring it over, and I think that's what we're going to stick with.
Outstanding. Well, you have so many others that you're working on, and we're completely out of time. But Michelle Salzman, always good to talk to you as we start to wrap up session. Thanks especially for the work you're doing on the Indian bills and, you know, just and all the stuff on recall of county commissioners and partisan elections for school boards and
Absolutely.
Term limits for school board members. All of those things are good. Representative Michelle Salzman, District 1, the North, not two-thirds, let's say, of Escambia County. As always, a pleasure. Thanks for the work you do and the time.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Most definitely. And by the way, I talked to her a little bit after the show yesterday, actually later on in the day, and apparently the Senate is not interested in taking up her version of the resign to run reform, so they are only interested in making it for president and vice president, not interested in opening it up to all of the senators and representatives for all federal offices. So bummer, because I thought she had a good alternative there, and it's exactly what Jason Pizzo, the Democrat, had argued for, and I thought, hey, if you can give the Democrats something reasonable that they're asking for, that's better governance. But apparently that's not what we're going to go with. So that's government for you. Hey, if you are thinking about buying or selling your home, obviously you want somebody who's going to get you the best price, high for selling, low for buying. And that's Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty. In fact, you know, one of the things you might think is, well, why do I need a realtor to buy a new build? Well, I'm telling you, she was telling me that because of the conditions in the market right now, some things are overbuilt and the builders are looking to get rid of the homes. She might be able to get, in fact, has gotten really good deals on even new builds, something you might not have thought about otherwise. But on the sell side, look, how many homes is the realtor you're considering? How many homes did they sell last year? Or how many homes did they sell in this quarter? I mean, it's a fair question to ask. Because, you know, like if you're going to a mechanic for your car, do you want the mechanic who worked on one car last year or the mechanic who worked on 150 or 200? Well, Christina Leavenworth sold, I think it's 230 homes last year. I know it's well over 200, okay? And in the first quarter of this year, she sold 36 with 29 more under contract. Meanwhile, half the agents on the MLS sold zero. 1,600 out of 3,000 agents sold zero homes so far this year. 20 sold more than 20, 7 sold more than 30. She's got 36 plus 29 under contract. Okay, look, it's fine if an agent wants to sell one or two homes a year. And, you know, that's great. But do you want to be the person where they got that, you're their one home or two homes versus somebody that'll get you through all the problems and get everything done efficiently for the best price on both sides? Well, that's Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty. Genuinely fantastic at this job. 723-9158, 723-9158.
To all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun.
Where we had some of our heaviest rain, and it was on the order of between 3 and 6 inches of rain. In fact, a daily record at Pensacola at the international airport there was broken. The old record to 3-something, and we ended up with 4.13 inches of rain.
4 inches at the airport. By the way, Alan Strum doesn't mean that's the most that ever fell in a day. He means on that date in history, that's the most that ever
right.
fell in that day. Because, you know,
it
we had the
lot.
Like the flood was, what, 23 inches or 24 inches of 2014. So, yeah. And obviously we've had hurricane days that have been more than that. But that's
sure.
a lot for that particular day and out of the hurricane season for sure. Did you get hail where you work, Jenna?
Yes. I was on my way somewhere, and I was coming from Fairfield to 12th Avenue.
Tree tunnel?
And, oh, yeah. I'm talking like, where are the rocks coming from? We definitely had a
Kids
blonde
in the woods.
Moment. Yeah.
What time was it? What time did you have the hail?
That was about 12:15.
Okay. All
yep.
right. I must have slept through it because I take my nap after the show. I must have slept through it because I didn't see it personally, which kind of bums me out because whenever there's hail or, you know, I like to see the thing, but I saw the pictures online. So, by the way, I asked you right before the break, I said, you're 36. I asked you if you're 35.
Because yeah.
when I play the drops, I'm always wondering, you know, will she, won't she know it? And you looked relieved. You know the McDonald's.
Yes, I do okay. know those commercials. Those bring me back.
David Wayne, I suspect, might be on the younger side of that knowledge base. Did you know the 2 all beef patty special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a
sesame seed bun?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
All right. Excellent. He's
that
our
was
people.
So good.
David Wayne in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
The woman who accused Emmett Till of whistling at her back in 1955 has passed away. Carolyn Bryant Donham passed away this week at the age of 88 from cancer. Donham, who was white, told her husband and his half-brother about the alleged incident involving Emmett Till. They went on to torture and kill Till in Mississippi. Last year, there was an unserved warrant found for Donham's arrest from 1955. The state attorney general there, though, said there was no evidence.
This is a horrible story. It is an injustice, and it is always dissatisfying when somebody does something like that and never has any consequences for it, other than whatever internal, I hope, regret at least she felt over this. But man, it's
absolutely that story was awful.
Go ahead,
awful.
David. Sorry.
Former Vice President Mike Pence has given testimony about Donald Trump. He testified Thursday in a federal probe about the former president's alleged role in the January 6th riot, and the White House now urging Americans living in Sudan to leave the country within the next 24 to 48 hours. Yesterday, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre made that announcement. She says the situation in Sudan could get worse at any moment. So far there, over 500 people have been killed in the fighting and thousands have been injured.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 556 News Radio 92.3. This is kind of interesting. In San Francisco, remember we had told you last transgressors on Friday, I talked about how in California they are recognizing that their boycott rule, that you can't go to states, you can't do business with states that have acronym unfriendly laws, that they don't like your trans laws, your gay laws, your bathroom laws, any of that kind of stuff, race laws, anything like that. And so like half the country wasn't allowed to do business with California. Well, now in San Francisco, they're actually abandoning their boycott of Republican states because they say, A, it has not worked. I could have told you that. because they honestly thought, well, if we take the moral high ground and punish people financially, they'll come around. And all of a sudden, you know, it didn't work. So they've been doing, there's 30 states. It had gone up to 30 states by the end of 2022, started in October of 2016. Title 12X, or Section 12X is what they called it. Anyway, the reversal of this ban, okay, 478,000 contracts have been issued with a value of $63 billion since that time. Okay, so a huge amount of money has been spent. And the policy analysis figures that something on the order of a 20% penalty they have paid because they weren't willing or able to do business with states that had what they considered to be unacceptable laws. So that would be something on the order of $12 billion that San Francisco has wasted in this virtue signaling effort to not do business with, you know, red states, basically. And so they're having to look at their voters and say, okay, I know we wasted $12 billion, y'all, and I know it didn't do anything, but I'm up for re-election. Pick me. So now they're undoing it because they figure it'll get them about a 20% saving going forward. And, of course, it didn't accomplish anything. We've made competitive bidding less competitive. The evidence is we haven't changed a single state law. And I think San Franciscans would be angry if they knew the amount of hoops they had to have be jumped through and added cost to the city contracting. Oh, you think? Well, but what price personal virtue? $12 billion, apparently. $12 billion. 558 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, Jerry Springer passed away. And
Jerry.
Yeah, exactly.
Jerry.
Like, what? When you go, what are you known for?
Dude.
I have never been a fan of this show. I have always genuinely hated the show. I thought that it was bad for the culture, bad for people, dragged us down, celebrated the worst in us. There's like no part of this that I appreciate. This is one of those where I know Candy would defend the show. I assume she would. So, you know, so I kind of wish she were only for that point. But no, I mean.
Listen, being sick, like on a day off and, you know, mom had to run an errand, so you're home, right? And so you're sitting there flipping through the channel and Jerry Springer comes on and you're just sitting there as a 7-year-old like,
oh, my God.
Oh, is he the father?
Oh, my God.
Listen, it's just... my life was a Jerry Springer episode. So you know what? Some people might just kind of be able to relate.
Hey, a lot of things to be said about Jerry Springer. The legacy, though, is going to be Jerry, Jerry, Jerry.